Last Word on Hockey's radio podcast on the Power Play. I'm your host, Ben Kerr, and with me, as always, is my trusty sidekick, Colton Prale. We're doing a festive holiday edition, so I have my ugly sweater on. I know Colton's got his ugly suit on, and away we go. How's it going tonight, Colton?
Happy holidays.
I like to rip you about the suits. You know that.
I wore it the other day.
Really, really?
Yeah. Yeah, yesterday I was wearing it.
I heard you on the other podcast. I heard it's not as bad as it looks in the picture on Facebook and Twitter, that for some reason it came out neon, but it's not quite that color. Is that true?
It is a much paler blue. I think there's a picture on my Instagram, if you go back far enough, or one that I'm tagged in, something like that, where it shows like the true color, and it is a very pale blue, not pastel-y, but pale. It looks nothing like the professional photography shot that is my profile picture on Twitter.
Yeah, it's that neon-y effect on that picture that really it turns it off. I don't have a problem with a blue suit. It's just the neon.
You know, I kind of like the neon, in all honesty. If I could get one of those, I totally would. I've got the shiny gunmetal silver one upstairs that my girlfriend won't let me wear. So, you know, it's probably for the best that I don't have the neon one.
All right. So with the holidays here, there is the holiday hockey tradition, and that is the World Junior Championships. That will be in Buffalo, New York, and being in prime time, it will take over Canadian television for the next couple of weeks as far as sports television goes. Even, you know, outshadowing regular season NHL games, it regularly outdraws that type of, you know, in terms of ratings, the World Junior games regularly outdraw NHL regular season games. So we're going to put our focus on that tournament right now. There's a couple of articles up on Last Word on Hockey on the players to watch in the tournament, so you can wander over and check those out. But Colton, this tournament is really intriguing, especially Pool A, which features Canada, the U.S., Finland, Slovakia, and the Sacrificial Lambs, Denmark.
I'm really excited for it, mostly because it's been the same way for the last couple of years, but I am less and less confident in Canada's ability to dominate the way they have recently in the Olympics. And I think that's why I almost like this tournament more for that reason. It's just because it feels like a more even playing field. And I think the U.S. this year has a really strong team that I'm excited to watch.
The three strongest teams in this tournament are all in Pool A. I know the Czechs are good. Swedes have a blue line that's going to be very strong as well. But to me, the three strongest teams in this tournament are in Pool A. And that's, of course, Canada, the U.S., and the Finns. So where do you want to start with that? Do we want to start with the defending gold medal champion U.S. team?
I'm okay with that.
Right. So one thing to notice about the U.S. team is, and especially this is going to be a big story because it's in Buffalo and he was Buffalo's first round draft pick last year, is Casey Mittelstadt. The U.S. has experimented with him at left wing with Logan Brown at center. They've experimented with him centering his own line. Where do we think he's going to end up?
I like the idea of him at center. For what it's worth, I love the idea of having four top-tier centers throughout your lineup, but I think when you slot in against Canada, it's probably best to slide him over on the wing and just have a dominant top six. That's how I would play that.
See, I'm one who loves to go... I'm not a believer in equal ice time. I'm a believer in my first line playing 18, 19 minutes a game.
I like it.
So
especially in a small tournament.
Yes. So I would slot him at left wing. I'm of the belief you go as strong as you can and you keep putting those five players on the ice as often as possible. Your five 10 best players, your top two lines, your top four defensemen. You just play the heck out of them in this short tournament, especially in big games. And remember, there's a lot of games bunched close together, but I'm probably going to give that line a little bit of a break when we play Denmark, and I'm probably going to give that line a little bit of a break when you play Slovakia as well. So they're not going to be playing 20 minutes every single night, but when you're playing against Canada and Finland and in the semifinals and stuff, why not?
I have no problem treating them like a Duncan Keith or an Erik Karlsson in the playoffs. You know, I think that is probably the best way to do it, looking at it as a coach of the international team. I don't know how their regular coaches are going to feel about that, but I think if you want to win the tournament, that's probably the best bet. Mm-hmm. It is just to overload your top two lines.
Yeah, and I know the Buffalo Sabres would love to see him play center because they want him to develop as a center, as it's just more valuable, and they probably would prefer that, but I mean, NHL teams don't get to influence what these international teams are doing with roster decisions and position decisions.
I'm excited for the Buffalo fans, though, just to see him in person at a tournament of this level, because he is the player I expect to shine. Not necessarily as the best States player, but the one I am most excited to see perform on the big stage. You know, we know what we're going to get out of guys like, Kiefer Bellows, for example, or Pelling, or Yamamoto. You know, those guys, I know what I'm expecting from them. I'm really excited to see what Mittelstadt can bring to the table.
Yeah, I think Pelling is, as a Montreal fan, I think he's going to have a very big role on this U.S. team. I think he's going to center the second line. But I think that second line is going to be used an awful lot, and it's going to be used against the other team's top line on whenever the U.S. can get that matchup. That's kind of where I see him playing. I mean, he's not the same type of player. He's more of a playmaker than a goal scorer and not quite as physical. But I see him playing a very Ryan Kessler type role for this U.S. team.
I would be okay with that. With that role, I guess that leaves me wondering where Logan Brown slots in, and a guy like Trent Frederick, because I'm not sure where either of them fit if you're giving those giant minutes to Paling.
I think Logan Brown is the center with Casey Mittelstadt.
That'd be exciting. I'd be okay with that.
That's where I think Logan Brown's going to fit in. And then I think Trent Frederick's going to have the third line to himself. And that second and third line are going to be basically interchangeable in terms of what they can do. One thing that's going to be very impressive about the Americans, and again, all three of the top teams in this pool, is the speed at which they will play. This American team is full of great skaters, and they will play in very high level speed game of hockey, I think, at this tournament.
That's frequently the case too with these top teams in this tournament, and I think that's the biggest draw for me. It is just, the decision making isn't always as solid as it is at the NHL level, but just the guns blazing, balls to the wall hockey is my favorite kind.
Yeah, no, and the openings that the mistakes and the inexperience create in a junior hockey game really do make for an exciting tournament, especially at the skill level that these guys have. They may not quite be NHL ready yet, like I've said, but they're close enough, and then they make enough mistakes that it just makes hockey more exciting. I mean, most goals that we see in hockey are because of a mistake at somewhere on the ice.
In the blue paint, do you think there's a chance that Wohl doesn't lead the way? Edinger has a chance?
I think they're setting up for Wohl to be the starting goalie at the start of this tournament. We've seen that with Wohl getting the full game the other night, and then Sweeney and Oettinger splitting time tonight in the U.S. Sweden game. So they definitely are setting up Wohl to be the starter. But anything can happen in these tournaments. I mean, one bad game and you could see a flip over. So there's no time to waste in these type of tournaments. We saw that last year with Canada, who started with Carter Hart, went to can't remember who was the second string was last year.
Isn't the Jets goalie now? The Jets system?
No, it wasn't Comrie. No. Can't remember who it was, but they went to their number two, and then they went back to Carter Hart when it was 2-0, when Sweden scored two quick goals in the semifinal, and then Carter Hart played the final. So anything can, you can't mess around with your goaltending in this tournament, and so I think Wall starts the tournament as a starter, but you know, one bad period, one bad game, he could find Oettinger in the net, and Oettinger is a terrific goalie as well.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. And I think for Leaf fans, this will be the real tournament where you can sort of see what you're getting with Wall. I mean, you know, to a certain extent where he sits, he's one of the better goaltending prospects for his age. And I'd be pretty assured if I was a Leaf fan that, you know, he's our guy for the future. But to really see him on the big stage like this after the way he played last year, it's exciting.
Yeah, that is something for Leaf fans to look forward to. They also have and we'll get to later, Timothy Lilchin, to look forward to as well.
God, they are lucky right now. I would kill to be a Leaf fan this year.
Yeah, there's
just
a
for
lot
the hope.
Yeah, there's a lot of hope in that system. Moving on to Team Canada, Carter Hart. He's been ridiculous this year in the WHL. Mm-hmm. Through 30 something games, he has a .961 save percentage.
There's just no words for that. he is just plain and simple, in my opinion, the best goaltending prospect this year.
Yeah, and he was he was my top rated goalie in his draft class in 2016. I compared him at the time. I said he's not as good. I'm not saying he's as good. But he is the best goaltender that the WHL has seen since Carey Price. And I felt that way in his draft year, that he was as good a goalie as as good as any goalie in the WHL post 2007 when Carey Price left that league.
That is high praise.
So I'm not saying he was as good as Price. No, I'm just saying he's been as good as any goalie there in a decade. He's 30, he's 30 points up on anybody else in that league, in terms of save percentage. Nobody else is above 931. So to be 961 is just flat out ridiculous. We saw him play for Canada against the Czechs. Wasn't tested all that much, but of course got the shutout. He's going to have to be the MVP and is the obvious choice for the MVP. If Canada is going to win gold in this tournament.
I agree. I don't, like, just looking at the Canadian lineup up and down, I'm just not, I don't want to say I'm not sold, but I don't think it has the same wow factor that the Americans do.
No, but I mean, and then you watch the game against the Czechs and the Swiss, and this team is fast. This team is very, very fast. Guys like Sam Steele can fly. Guys like Jordan Kyrou.
Drake Batherson.
Yeah, Drake Batherson. Michael McLeod might be the best skater in the tournament. This lineup just, it comes at you in waves and waves and waves. And Ray Ferraro had a good point tonight in the middle of the second period. He said, the Swiss just can't, they're gassed. They do not know what to do with this four lines of speed coming at them and at them and at them. And the second half of the game, the Swiss had nothing left to give against Canada. And that's very much what happened in the Czech game as well. They had nothing left to give because four lines of speed just coming at them over and over and over again. And the defense also has speed. You know, Cale Makar, Victor Mete, Cale Clegg, these guys all come at you, move the puck up the ice quickly and get to loose pucks and forecheck hard, and everything is done at a very high pace for this Canadian team.
I think so. I definitely think so. And I think we're seeing it even just from guys who perhaps coming into this, I wasn't expecting much from. Alex Vermaeten sticks out for me just because as a Sens fan, he's impressed me so much this year. And I know you don't want to read too much into pre-tournament games, especially against teams like the Czech. It has impressed me. They have looked formidable. And that was my biggest fear going into it, was that, you know, these pre-tournament games, they were going to win something like 2-0, 3-0. And it's like, yeah, it's a win, but you're Canada. And you're held to a different standard, especially in a pre-tournament game. And you should be beating up on these teams. And to see them actually doing that is reassuring. I still have my concerns as to how they'll compete with the best teams in the tournament, but I don't have that concern anymore that they're not going to be able to score even in games where they should be winning 5-6-0.
Well, I mean, let's talk about some of these players. I mean, yeah, they don't have the top 10 draft pick, not at forward anyway, on this roster that we normally see. But Jordan Kyrou is lighting up the OHL right now. Sam Steele was the leading scorer in the WHL last season and was the MVP. Robert Thomas is lighting things up for the London Knights. Taylor Radish is one of the top scorers in the OHL again. They do have a bunch of players who can score points at the National Junior at the Canadian Hockey League level and at the National Junior level. These players may not be top NHL draft picks, but that doesn't mean they can't score and they can't provide the offense for Canada.
Then that's fair. I mean, with a guy like Sam Steele, with the season the Pats are having this year, I think I had a few questions. You know, and just the performance he put up last season, you know, over 2 points a game. This year, he's just over a point a game, closer to a point and a half, 1.3 per game. Yeah, that was part of my concern, was it just those key guys had either taken a small step back or weren't going to be able to contribute in the same way. But you are right that they do have, you know, the acumen and the history of being able to do it. And they are talented players. Otherwise, they wouldn't be on the stage.
Yeah, Tyler Steenberger is their 13th forward right now. I think he got a couple of goals tonight, so he may move up the lineup. But he's leading the entire CHL in goals right now. I mean, there'll always be questions about a team that cut Cody Glass and that cut Nick Suzuki about how much they're going to score. But I don't think that will be a big Achilles heel for them. I think if they lose the tournament, it won't be because of those cuts.
Glass was a surprise to me. More so than Suzuki. Glass, I expected to make it. And I was shocked when he didn't.
Mm-hmm. I personally thought Suzuki was more in line for the spot because of his versatility, because he can kill penalties, because he can play right wing and center. I thought that he was a very good bet to make the team. I was a bit surprised to see him cut. But I think it speaks to, while this team doesn't have a superstar, it has incredible depth.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you talked about it. You mentioned it against the game against the Swiss. It just is that. It is four lines. And it goes back to that discussion we opened this cast with, was, you know, how do you play? Do you load your top two, or do you drive four solid, good lines like Canada's done in the past and have done at the Olympic level as well?
Yeah, I don't think Canada can load a line. Like, I don't
That's
see
fair.
How...
That's a fair point.
How you really load a line on this team. I mean, they've done it as much as they can with Kyrou and Steele on one line, and with Radish and Robert Thomas on the second line. But I don't know how much more you could load up a line than that.
No, that is a very fair counterpoint.
All right. Moving to the Finns. Very dangerous team to me. That the blue line should be excellent. 5 NHL first round draft picks on that blue line. 2 of them top 5 picks in Mikko Heiskanen, or Miro Heiskanen, sorry, and Olli Juhlevi. Very, very dangerous team here from Finland. It's a bit of a quirk in this year's schedule. First off, Canada and the U.S. got put in the same pool when normally they would be in opposite pools as being the gold and silver medalists last year. Normally they would, one would be in A and one would be in B, but they were put in the same pools because of wanting that outdoor game. Mm-hmm. And then you had Finland, who finished ninth, getting drawn into that pool, and you might have the top three teams in this one pool.
I completely agree. I'm most excited, I think, for Heiskanen, just because of the third round pick from, or the third overall pick, I should say, by the Stars. When that happened, I know I was a little surprised. I know there were some pundits, I believe yourself included, who were calling for that prior to it. It was not necessarily on my radar, so I'm really interested to see what he can do in a tournament at this level, just because I haven't had the chance to watch him a ton.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's hard to see a lot of games from Finland, and I mostly had seen him at the under 18 level and a little bit of other international play, under 17s and other hockey that he had played before that. But yeah, I didn't have him as my third ranked prospect. I had him closer to sixth or seventh, I believe. I'd have to go back and look. But I did have him. I did call that the Stars were going to draft him. I had heard a lot out of Dallas that they really, really liked him. And so when I did my mock draft, I did have him going to the start.
I'm excited to see what he brings. And of course, Ylevi is Ylevi, and he'll always be a joy to watch. I'm curious about St. Tolvanen, though. I really like the Preds international picks. They've done really well in the past. And I'm curious to see if this is another Victor Arvidsson in the making.
He's a pure sniper. He has an outstanding wrist shot, the ability to also score goals in tight to the net, the quick hands to get tip-ins, deflections, pounce on rebounds. But he's also got that excellent wrist shot and release and a very good one-timer. So he's the kind of player that if someone feeds him the puck, he's going to score goals. I don't know how much he creates for himself in terms of creating his own opportunities or his own shots or carrying the puck in zone entries, that type of thing. But he is a pure finisher and should be able to score some goals in this tournament.
Is there a player you've got your eye on the Finns that perhaps, you know, is going to surprise people who aren't as knowledgeable about prospects this year?
Well, I think a great pick was Aleksi Heponiemi out of the WHL. He's leading the WHL in points as of right now. It was a Florida Panthers pick in the third round. And I compared him a lot with Kyler Yamamoto and said, you know, this is a very highly skilled, high speed, high level puck skill type guy who is getting downgraded because of his size. And I think Kyler Yamamoto got the advantage of having played 3 years in the WHL and just kept putting himself in front of scouts again and again and again in order to be a first round pick. And Heponiemi only had 1 year in the WHL before he got drafted. And I think that hurt him, but I think that they are very comparable players. And so I think people will be surprised at how good he is and how good of a prospect and a pick that Florida's made there.
Interesting one to keep an eye on for sure. And of course, to watch when Dale Tallon eventually trades him in the I'm reversing everything the computer boys did.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I don't know. Did the computer boys draft him, or did Dale Tallon have control by the time he made that pick?
I think that's an answer only Dale Tallon knows. That was a weird situation by that point in time.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely that Panther situation. Now, Denmark last year, they surprised everyone. They got their first win, I believe, at the World Juniors. They avoided relegation and actually qualified for the medal round. Ended up finishing fifth overall in the tournament. Is there any repeat miracle coming out of Denmark, or is this, I mean, they've got a couple of seventh round draft picks amongst their forwards. They've got the goalie who backstopped the incredible games against Switzerland and Finland last year. Mm-hmm. Was that a one-off, or is this something more for Denmark?
I think it was a one-off. I think Krog put together one of the most outstanding performances, or two of the most outstanding performances I've seen at a tournament like this in a long time. And unless you're counting on that again, I don't really see it happening.
I can't,
you know, especially with the group this year. You know, there isn't that second team that is right around their level. You know, they don't have Belarus, for example.
Yeah, you don't. I think that they are destined to get knocked down again. I think Slovakia is a better club. I think Slovakia will probably finish fourth on this. They have their own goaltending with David Hranek, who plays for St. Cloud State and has only played in 6 games this year as a freshman. Hard to get into the net in NCAA as a freshman. But in the 6 games he's played, he's been fantastic. He's put up 1 shutout. He's got a 940-something save percentage. A little bit of a smaller goaltender, which was why he didn't get drafted, I think, last year, even though a very strong season in the USHL with Green Bay. And he's a reflex guy, but I think he can make a lot of saves for Slovakia. And I think that Slovakia will definitely take the 4th spot. And the playoff spot, and we will see if Denmark can survive in the relegation round.
And that's the other knock against Denmark, is that even if your goaltending is excellent, you're coming up against 4 other teams with a solid netminder.
Yeah, and then you just have more talent up front on the Slovakian team with a guy like Adam Ruzicka, who highly, highly talented player and is starting to put it together in Sarnia, but still has some inconsistent moments in his game. But when he's on, he can be as good as anyone taken in the second round of last year's draft. I know he went in the 4th to the Flames, but when he's on, he would have been a borderline first rounder but he just did not have the consistency.
Interesting. He had a strong tournament last year, though, didn't he?
Yes, and I think, I don't know if it's a motivation thing, because he's certainly going to get up for a short tournament like this, and he certainly played well, again, for Sarnia in the OHL playoffs and down the stretch last year. It just seemed that on some nights he was a little disinterested.
That's a fair critique. That's something I remember hearing about last year as well.
So I think when you have him in this tournament and in this situation, he's going to end up playing some good hockey for Slovakia, and he's a player to watch. You've also got Marian Studnik, who's over a point per game for the Hamilton Bulldogs, and he can certainly skate and fly around the ice as well as anyone, and will be able to keep up with the faster teams in this tournament.
You want to move over to Pool B?
Sure. Let's go over to Pool B. Sweden, another intriguing team. A lot of eyes on that blue line that has an Erik Brännström, that has our likely first overall pick in Rasmus Dahlin, mm-hmm. that has Timothy Liljegren. That blue line will be providing a lot of offense for that Swedish team and will be moving the puck very quickly up the ice for them.
Undoubtedly. I mean, there's always that one player at the tournament that impresses the most, and my money this year is on Rasmus Dahlin. I mean, there's from what we've seen out of him so far, this is the player I'm expecting the most out of, but by far. And I'm interested not only to see how he plays, because in so many of his highlight reel packs, you see him picking up the puck and going on his own, and in almost an Erik Karlsson-esque style end-to-end rush. I'm interested to see how he works with a guy like Alex Nylander or Elias Pettersson, who's got some real dynamic play and could really complement him.
Yeah, and Alex Nylander and Elias Pettersson, a Elias Andersson. The Swedes will have some forwards who can put the puck in the net and who can create some offense as well. I'm not saying that to say all their offense will come from their defense, but it's going to be a slick transition game between the forwards and the defensemen on the Swedish team.
I mean, you've got two guys in Dahlin and Liljegren who can act as that fourth or quasi fourth forward.
I would say three with Brännström as well.
That's true. That's true.
Vegas's pick at 15th overall. Many forget that Brännström was actually drafted higher than Liljegren.
It's true. Liljegren just has that Maple Leaf allure. It's it's all the media buzz.
Yeah, going into last season, he was competing for was supposed to be Liljegren and Nolan Patrick for first overall, and then Nico came out of not out of nowhere, but came from further down the top 10 to challenge and eventually become the number one pick. But Liljegren was supposed to be Nolan Patrick's main competition when we were going into last season. Some mono issues. Could be blamed for him falling down the draft board a little bit, not having as good a season. And so let's see how he bounces back now with top level competition. He's looked all right in the AHL, but it's hard to judge an 18-year-old defenseman fresh out of Europe in the AHL. It's a league that's not set up for him to really dominate or have huge levels of success. If he was, I mean, we'd be inundated with how good a prospect, and rightly so he is. But I don't think not dominating the AHL is a mark against him. Just being merely good in that league, I don't mark that against him in any way.
No, I think that's a completely fair assessment. I wouldn't have expected him to dominate the AHL at 18, changing to a bigger surface, playing against men. I mean, like, those are huge changes to undertake.
Yeah, and so this tournament going against his age group again will be a very interesting test and a very intriguing assessment of where he's at, even if it is a short tournament.
Mm-hmm. Alex Nylander, anything really to say that hasn't been said? I mean, we know what we're getting with him. We've seen him before numerous times. He's just a fantastic player.
He's incredibly talented. I'm surprised he hasn't made bigger strides yet at the pro level, at the AHL level, and forced himself onto the Sabres yet. But I fully expect him to be a dominant player in this tournament as he was last year. And he's a heck of a hockey player. He's going to be a very good hockey player. He's got some things to still learn, but I think he will be an excellent addition to the Sabres in a short time.
I was looking at their depth the other day, and I just don't understand how, like, unless it is an organization decision to keep him in the AHL, there's no way he can't crack their bottom six. It's brutal.
Yeah, no, I think it is. It's a top six or nothing type proposition for their management team right now. And let's not forget burning a year towards free agency. You know, if he doesn't play his seven games, he doesn't burn the year on the entry-level contract. And if he doesn't play 40 games, he doesn't burn a year towards arbitration and towards free agency.
And that's valuable in today's league, and something I probably should have considered.
Yeah, especially when you're the Sabres. I mean, that team's bad.
Yeah, I mean, you need to maximize your ability to pay extra to bring in free agents.
they're bad. I mean, I know the plan at the start of the season certainly wasn't to tank per se, but when you are where you are at this point, or even where they were at the end of October, tanking starts to look like an attractive option.
Especially with Dahlin as a potential prize.
Yes, and with the Sabres needing so much help on the blue line, we talked about him, and I love Casey Mittelstadt as a player, and I think he'll be an excellent NHLer. I was surprised, given what the Sabres have drafted in recent years, that they did not go for a blue liner both of the last 2 years with Nylander and with Mittelstadt.
I agree. It took me for a little bit of a spin as well, especially with the amount of talent in last year's draft on the blue line.
Well, this year will be even better on the blue line. We may have upwards of 15 or 16 first round defensemen in this year's draft.
That is music to my ears. As a Senators fan who's potentially losing Erik Karlsson, yeah, that's good news.
So yeah, there is a lot of defense in this 2018 draft. You know, you've got two of the top three potentially being Swedish defensemen.
Move on to Russia, Andrei Shvetnikov.
Yeah, he's dominated in Barry. He's almost at a goal per game pace out there. He's done everything they've asked of him. He's likely going to go second overall. I say likely. It's probably closer between him and Bockfist for second overall than it is between him and Dahlin for first. Big winger, got both power and skill to his game. And just can't stop scoring in the OHL. So I think he will be a very high draft pick this year. Probably will be in the NHL at this time next year.
He excites me. He reminds me. He's just, I don't want to say old school, but that's the first word that comes to mind with him. And not because of his talent or the way he plays, but just his size and skill and ability to be so. He's what Bobby Ryan could have been if he was fast.
Yeah, he's got all the skill, the edge work, the agility, the ability to make those quick cuts, those quick moves that complement the stick handling and allow you to beat defenders one-on-one. You really need to marry. At the speed the game is played at right now, you can't just be all dangles. You also have to have the footwork to go with that to beat defensemen one-on-one, and he has that. But he also has the strength and the size to, if he gets a step on them and they get a hook in on him, to fight through that check and still get to the front of the net.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what he does. And I know our Blues writers are really excited to see what Klim Kostin does.
Yeah, Kostin is, again, he's got a lot of the skills, not maybe to the same level that Svechnikov has, but has that same type of profile in being a poor man's version of what Svechnikov can do. But he's never really put together the production, especially at the international level, that we've seen that should go with those skills. So I know that this tournament isn't for 17-year-olds, and last year it may not have been a tournament that was set up for him to do well in. But now, a year older, I am expecting some bigger things from Kostin.
Talk to me a little bit about what else we can see throughout the division. I mean, we covered Russia, we covered Sweden. Before we get to the Czech, let's have a little fun. Go to Switzerland, because they're a team that always seems like, you know, potentially they can get a couple wins, but never really pushes. Do they have anybody who can maybe give them that edge this year?
Well, on defense, they have Geiser, who is has excellent positioning, and he is very strong in his own end, will likely be playing 25 minutes a game for them. He's big, he's mobile, and he can move the puck. So he will be an important piece for the Swiss team. On the back end. Up front, they have Philip Kurashev, who is at a point per game for the Quebec Remparts in the QMJHL, and is looking like a potential first or second round pick in this year's draft. They also have I'm going to butcher his name, but Neusenberger, and he looks as a top five pick in 2019. I didn't put him in my players to watch. I'm actually going to make some additions to my Pool B players to watch later on after we tape this show, because I just realized I did a lot more players in Pool A. Likely be adding him. And he's likely a top five pick in 2019 right now. But as I said before, you know, he's got 3 years of eligibility for this tournament ahead of him. And it's very hard for a 16/17-year-old, I think he's 17 right now, to do exceptionally well at this tournament. This is a tough tournament for that age group. And so I don't know that this will be his coming out party. I'm sure he'll be on the team. I'm not sure what kind of minutes they're going to give him. And I'm not sure. I think the under 18 coming up in the spring will be more of a coming out party and more of a real showcase for him than the World Juniors. But he is on this Swiss team. That's Valentin Nussenberger.
The Czechs, Filip Zadina, impressive, fast, incredibly fast.
Another of the European picks coming through the Halifax Mooseheads organization. Their drafting's incredible. Mm-hmm. Again, three first-round picks likely to come out of Halifax, and likely a second round, you know, one of the top three or four goalies in this draft is also in Halifax this year. He's the best of the bunch, though, and is challenging again for that third, fourth overall spot. Incredibly fast, got skill, got everything that you would want in a winger, and someone who is going to be very important to the Czech attack.
Yeah.
Heavy shot.
Where do you see the Czech falling in this tournament? I mean, is this the typical Czech performance we're going to see, or do they have a few extra pieces this year that they could perhaps maybe not make a push, but at least contend with someone like a Russia?
With a Russia, yes, because they have the same issues that Russia has, and that's on the blue line. These two teams both have outstanding forwards. We've got Chytil, who was a first-round pick of the Rangers. We've got Martin Nekash, who was taken very early by the Carolina Hurricanes. We got Zadina. This Czech team has a bunch of good forwards, just like the Russians do. Past Libor Hajcek, I'm not sure what they have on the blue line. And that's the question as well for the Russians past, you know, their top defenseman or so. Where's the depth on the Russian blue line past Minulin? And so that's kind of the question for both of these teams. And that's why I think that will be an intriguing matchup. I think Sweden takes this group rather easily over both Russia and the Czechs. And then they are fighting for second and third.
No, that was my predictions as well. And then Belarus, do they get a win?
Not in group play. Not in group play. they cannot beat Switzerland. And even the Swiss could challenge, you know, the Swiss. Because they play such a disciplined game always, you know what you're going to get from the Swiss. And that's going to be a very strong defensive posture with some skill to be able to take advantage of the you know, three or four golden opportunities they can create in a game, and then try and limit the high danger shots against. They could upset someone, but they should be better than Belarus in their head-to-head game. And so it's going to be Belarus and Denmark, I think, in our relegation battle.
Who's your gold medalist?
I hate to say it, but I think the Americans.
That's mine too. that's the way I'm leaning early on too.
I think the only thing that that gives me pause is how good can Carter Hart be? given what he's done, and we talked about given what he's done in the WHL, how good can Carter Hart be in this tournament, especially when we get into the elimination games?
And I think that's the question. It's been the last couple of years for Canada. Is can their goaltending be the best? And I mean, with Carter Hart, I have faith. I really do.
With Carter Hart, he gives you a chance to be the top goaltender in this tournament, and I don't know that Canada had that in previous years. I mean, I know Carter Hart's a returning player from last year, but there's a big difference between an 18 and a 19-year-old goalie in this tournament.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The maturity, and as he's showing in the WHL this year, just the experience helps a ton.
All right, so if you want to join us in talking about the World Juniors, in talking about the NHL, and in covering the sport, If you're looking to get into writing, check out Last Word on Hockey. And there's a Write for Us tab right at the top of the screen. You can get yourself involved, send an application to Colton and myself and to Nick Hendrickson and John Gove. And we will evaluate that, the four of us, and make a decision. And, you know, if you, you know what you're talking about and can write semi-decent, you we'll bring you on board. We've got some editors to help you out and get you started in writing. I know it's something that that a lot of people have thought about and are just not sure where to get started. So that's where you can get started with us.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great group, and you know, it's a good way to make some beer money too while you're at it.
Yeah, little extra cash on the side as we do pay out for people who are able to generate hits to the site, because that's what pays our bills and keeps the site running. And if we get a little extra on top, we're willing to give it back to the writers.
Completely, completely. Ben, any great articles you've been reading recently?
Well, I think we've got some interesting stuff coming out tomorrow on Charlie McAvoy. Some interesting stuff coming out on the Islanders situation and what they needed to do at the trade deadline in order to convince John Tavares to re-sign. That, of course, article has come out in the light of this week's news, and that was from Joe Jacques. He's put out an excellent article that Islanders fans and will want to read about what to do at the trade deadline. But it comes out in light of the news that the Islanders have an arena plan in Belmont Park.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. I think John Tavares said it best. Hey, that's where they belong. That is home for New York.
Yeah, they belong on Long Island. They didn't really belong in Brooklyn. It was just all wrong.
Yeah, the uniform, the arena. It was all wrong.
Yeah, and I mean, it felt like a European arena with the car in the corner.
Yep. And yep.
If you saw any of the pictures, the scoreboard doesn't hang at center ice.
Yeah. No, I it just didn't work. I didn't like it, and I'm excited for them to have a new home. I'm a little disappointed as an MLS fan, but I am more excited as an NHL fan.
Yeah, they have the worst attendance in the NHL right now. I don't know how many people out there know that.
They had 10,000 at their last game. 10,000!
This is a team with two of the top three scorers in the NHL.
Yeah.
An excellent record, pushing for, I mean, that Metro Division's ridiculous, 1-7.
Mm-hmm.
But pushing for a playoff spot, currently in a playoff spot, currently winning the majority of their games. Really exciting rookie in Matt Barzal as well, and just a really strong team. You know that they can put the puck in the net and they can score when they are one of the have the record they have and are also one of the worst defensive and worst goaltending stats teams in the NHL.
Yeah, and I think that's what you got to do at the deadline. I know Waite was saying he needed Nick Leddy to be his second best player, but I mean, that's just not who Leddy is at this point in his career. And if they can address those issues, I really like this team going forward.
Oh, they absolutely need a goaltender.
Yeah.
I would be very interested in Robin Lehner if I were them.
Mm-hmm.
I would be, because of the contract, not quite as interested in Jimmy Howard.
Yeah, the contract and the age give me hesitation there, but I think Robin Lehner has definitely shown enough flashes of promise to at least be an adequate goaltender for them.
Yeah, I've heard some rumors of Aaron Dell as well. I don't
like that.
It feels like a move you make if you're the Oilers and you're going after Cam Talbot, because that worked. And I didn't mind, and I know it's blowing up in their face right now, but I didn't mind the Carolina Hurricanes doing the Scott Darling deal.
I love the Scott Darling deal, and it hasn't worked out the way I expected it to. But, you know, you go back in time, and I think you make that move 9 times out of 10 if you're Carolina.
Yeah,
with what you knew at the time, because he did look legit, and he still may be legit. You know, this is his first season starting.
Yeah, and I see that's the kind of team that I think should be going after Adell. If you're thinking about making Aaron Dell your starter, if you're the New York Islanders, you've got to get an established goalie for this stretch run in this playoff run. You've got to get someone who you know you can stick in the net and you know will stop the puck for you, and that's going to be their question mark going forward.
That's the biggest thing. If you can solve that, I think they've got a decent chance in the Metro.
Yeah. I mean, who saw this Josh Bailey thing coming?
Nobody. Nobody. I mean, even if you came to me before and you were like, who's going to be the second best player on the Islanders next season, Josh Bailey would not have been anywhere near the top of my list. He probably would have been top five, but not two.
I mean, I'm going to admit I've got Josh Bailey in my fantasy hockey pool.
Oh, of course you do.
And I took him in like with my last pick, so I had no idea he was this good. I mean, it's the Pavel Datsyuk argument. Everyone's like, oh, Detroit's such a great scouting team for getting Pavel. Well, if you knew Pavel Datsyuk was that good, you would have taken him in the second round and not risk somebody else taking him. I mean, even if you knew he wasn't a first rounder, you wouldn't have waited as long as you did.
Yeah, you don't pass on a guy six times if you know he's great.
Yeah, so yeah, you knew he had some potential and he developed and whatever. I took Josh Bailey on a flyer because I saw that he was lining up next to John Tavares in preseason. And it was merely, I'm going to take the leech points off Tavares. You know,
those secondary assists.
I'm going to take he's going to be my Matt Molson pick or my Kyle Okposo pick or whoever has lined up beside John Tavares and gotten, you know, their 50-60 point season all the time. That was what that pick was, and it was like, well, it's my last round pick, and if he gets shifted to the second line, then I drop him and pick someone else up off waivers. Kind of deal.
Worked out well for you.
Yeah, and who, like, I part of it is playing next to Tavares. I get that. He's not the third leading scorer in the NHL if he isn't playing next to Tavares. But I think part of it is this is Josh Bailey actually breaking out, and he could be a 50-60 point guy even without John Tavares on another first line that's maybe has some talent but not as good as what he's got right now.
At the elite center he's got right now. Speaking of the Metro and breakouts, and it's not really a breakout, but I haven't seen a ton of people talking about it. I just wanted to say how good Claude Giroux has been this year. He has really reasserted himself as the Claude Giroux of days of old. You know, him and Jakub Voracek have both had fantastic seasons so far.
Yeah, moving Giroux to the wing, giving him less responsibility defensively, has really worked out. And Sean Couturier has taken a step forward. These are guys, Josh Bailey and Sean Couturier, are two guys who we don't see this a lot out of.
Yeah. Sean Couturier was in a different role, though. You know, like, he proved he could score when he was young, but then he hasn't been in that role in a while.
But both top 10 picks who were solid NHL players weren't, I mean, not to disparage them, but they were just solid NHLers, and they weren't quite living up to their draft status. And now here we are, and they're 25, 26 years old, and all of a sudden are breaking out and becoming true first-line players. That is pretty rare in today's NHL. Normally you see these guys drafted that high. If you're not doing it by the age of 22 or 23, you're never going to do it.
And I think it just shows what happens if you give these guys a chance. You know, if you give these guys who do have the ability but maybe haven't shown it quite yet, if you just play them and see what you've got in the right minutes with the right personnel, you can get results. It's not going to happen with everybody, but, you know, there are people who will work for, and Josh Bailey and Sean Couturier have shown that that's the case.
Yeah, and I mean, talented hockey players will rise to the surface no matter what the problems are, what the circumstances are. You can only hold them down for so long, and eventually they will get a sniff of an opportunity and take advantage of it and earn more ice time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Mark Scheifele is that one for me. 15th in league scoring right now, and he's just been consistently proving what a quality player he is.
Yeah, Mark Scheifele, one of the top centers in the game. I think if Team Canada was putting in an Olympic roster this year, you'd absolutely have to consider Mark Scheifele for one of the spots somewhere on that roster. I don't know who he pushes out because Canada has so much depth down the middle. But to me, he's at that type of elite level where he is one of the best in the game and should be on an Olympic team, even one as deep as Canada, if they were playing a best-on-best tournament this year.
I completely agree. I was on Twitter earlier today, and I think it was Dom Gallimini or possibly Dom Lecision. I think it was Dom Lecision, actually, who had him in over Jonathan Toews, I believe, which is an interesting choice.
I don't know that the Hockey Canada brass would do that to Jonathan Toews.
Oh, never, never. God, no. But I think you could justify it this season.
I personally do not. I agree with that decision of Mark Scheifele being ahead of Jonathan Toews right now. Jonathan Toews gets the leader beans, as I call them. He's got a whole bunch of leader beans that put him in the conversations of top players of the game. It was like, remember a few years ago when there was that debate, who's better, Jonathan Toews or Sidney Crosby?
Yeah, I loved that debate. It's how you know whether someone's a good or bad hockey fan.
Yeah. You know, it was like, really? Like yeah. You know,
yeah.
I know he's got these cups, but no, I don't think Jonathan Toews is a better hockey player. I don't think your magic leader beans give you what you think they do.
Oh, I know. It was, it's not Lemieux Gretzky, but it was frustrating.
Yeah, no. I'm Lemieux Gretzky, you can still have that argument, I think.
That's just it, you know? But I think people wanted it to be. And, yeah. And it just...
No, yeah. and it's like people who think that Alex Ovechkin isn't one of the top five players in the league.
Oh, completely. I mean, you can have a legitimate discussion, is Alex Ovechkin, you know, the greatest goal scorer of all time. And if you're talking about a man in that way, he is almost certainly one of the best players in the league.
Yeah.
Those types of discussions I just stray away from for the most part because I just leave shaking my head.
Yeah. No, it's it makes for some interesting topics. Now, looking around the NHL, what's happening with Vegas?
I don't.
When do the smoke and mirrors go away on this team? I mean, all the eye test, all the analytics, everything, the looking at their roster on paper, you know, no matter how you want to do it, this record just seems completely unsustainable. What is going on with the Vegas Golden Knights?
I have no, and so many people are trying to explain it as, you know, that Vegas flu, that's that you go to Las Vegas and you get a little, you know, you enjoy yourself and then you're not ready to play hockey. But I don't know that I fully buy into that. I look at teams like Tyler Dello had an interesting article for The Athletic where he dissected Vegas's scoring. And I think it was their third or second line went out with their third or their second pairing, excuse me, had like an 86 or 82% goals for percentage when they were on the ice. That's just unsustainable. You know, that's putting out Crosby, Ovechkin, and Stamkos against a fourth line. You know, that's those kind of numbers. But that's what they're rocking this season. It's guys like, you know, Marchessault, who is definitely a strong player, but being much better than he should be, given the caliber of players he's playing with and the competition he's playing. I think this is just one of those good stories, and I don't think we'll ever have an answer to what happened, and I don't think it will continue. And I, you know, whether it stops now, whether it stops in 2 months, or whether it stops at the start of next season, you know, I don't think Vegas is a true cup contender. I think they'll make the playoffs, and I think they'll go out in the first round.
I think they've gotten themselves enough of a cushion that it would take too much of a disaster to really miss at this point. But
yeah.
I mean, it's possible. We said the same about Philly last year. We were like, they have too much of a cushion, and the top five in the Metro are locked down. And I know I was saying this at this time last year about the Philadelphia Flyers. So it could happen. I mean, you never know.
Theoretically, yes, but I don't buy it. I don't think it will. They'd have to play so poorly. Even if they play 500 hockey, I think they make it.
Oh, the 500 hockey, they're in by a mile.
You know,
460 hockey, they're in.
Yeah, and I think this team is at least a 460 team, you know? Yeah. Like, unless they're going to be Colorado Avalanche bad.
Yeah.
I think...
You've got to really go in the toilet to blow the lead that they have in terms of getting into the playoffs right now.
I can see them finishing, you know, like, eighth, though. Eighth, ninth in the league.
Yeah. I can see that. And, again, another team that's... surprised, and I don't know that we should be that surprised about them. Winnipeg Jets being up at the top of the NHL.
I'm so excited for that. I have picked the Winnipeg Jets to be my surprisingly good team for like 5 years in a row now. I'm glad they're just finally doing it.
Oh, I could never. I picked them to be a surprisingly good team this year. I could never do it as long as they had Andrei Pavlik in net.
I always thought they would be able to outscore him. And every time they proved me wrong. And I was like, yeah, but maybe this year.
Yeah, they just had to get rid of Pavlik. I always called him, I still call him the worst goaltender in the NHL, including all the backups.
I'm sure that's not at all an exaggeration.
No. And I said that when he was starting for the Jets. I was like, he's the worst goalie in the NHL, including all the backups.
Just abysmal. You know who's been insanely good, though, and has really surprised me, and I didn't expect them to be this good, is Dallas. Best defense in the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas, I thought Dallas would move up the standings, and I thought their defense would shore up a little bit with Ken Hitchcock. But the reason I had them moving up the standings was Alex Radulov and Martin Hanzel and all the offense that they added in. I did not think that their defensive zone work would be near as good as it's been. But that's a surprising team.
I'm expecting a surge from them.
Yeah. Another surprise is the New Jersey Devils.
I will butcher. Hischier and Hall have been invaluable to that team.
Yeah, and I mean, I had people I put out the Will Butcher story last year where I scouted him and I said he's going to be a pretty good NHL player. And I had so much crap for that. People being like, no, he'll be a seventh defenseman, or he's an AHLer, or he's a long shot, or whatever. I'm like, no, the kid can play. And everyone's like, his skating is so bad. And I'm like, it was when he was drafted. It's not right now. And I'm like, his skating has been getting crapped on for years. His skating's actually pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, he's shown it this year. He's got a couple of just great highlight reel assists and just length of the ice plays where he's been fantastic.
But enough patting myself on the back here, because I did not know he was going to be this good.
No, I don't think anybody did. Like, you know, even if you ask the Devils, I don't think they expected they were getting this caliber of defenseman. He's been outstanding.
Yeah, no, I had him as a surefire NHLer, but I had him as, you know, a power play guy, and maybe a number four at best, probably on your 5-6.
But yeah, this is not a 5-6.
No, not at all. He's been extremely valuable at even strength. He's been extremely valuable to the Devils, and has taken a a team that was weak defensively and didn't have enough puck movers back there. And now we've got him. We've got we've got Sammy Vatanen, who they just acquired. We've got Sissons as well, Damon Severson.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is he really that young?
Well, what's he at right now?
I thought he was like 26.
23.
Oh wow. I was way up on that.
Yeah, 2012 draft pick, 23. So that's really changed him maturing, Severson maturing, Will Butcher coming in, and Sammy Vatanen now being a part of it. They have a mobile puck-moving defense corps.
Yeah, this is not the New Jersey Devils of even 2 years ago.
They are a fast team. Nico Hischier is incredibly quick. Taylor Hall might be the best winger outside of Alex Ovechkin. Might be one of the best wingers in hockey. Okay, Nikita Kucherov. Yeah,
I just want to remind you of that.
Yeah, Nikita Kucherov, Alex Ovechkin. But in terms of how a winger can drive possession and can control scoring chance percentages and things like that, he drives play like very few wingers in the NHL can.
You know who could really use a winger like that? The Edmonton Oilers.
They certainly are a little weak on the wing.
Oh my gosh. He's been so good. Like, you watch his play, even for a single game this season with the Devils, and it just baffles me that he was moved. Baffles me.
Well,
it's just Shirelli, okay.
That was, I don't know what happened on that day. But a few GMs took some crazy pills that day.
Yeah.
Because there were two trades, and both of them I was like, and?
What do you mean one for one?
They traded him for, okay, they got Larson, and? What do you mean there's no and?
They got
Montreal got Shea Weber, and?
Yep.
What do you mean?
Oh my gosh.
No, yeah. It was like within, and that was I don't know if it was 27 minutes or 21 minutes, and the Stamkos re-signing all happened, those three moves.
I was working at Sportsnet at the time on their web desk, and I remember talking with some of the other editors being like, hey, that was the trade of like the past 5 years, and it lasted for 20 minutes before the PK trade came down.
Yeah, no, and both of them just had me shaking my head saying, well, the first one had me shaking my head. The second one, I'm lucky there was no puppies around because they may have been punted somewhere.
The second one drove you to drink.
Yeah. The second one definitely drove me to drink and just not understanding where, what those GMs were thinking in either move.
That was a crazy day, and I want another one.
I am hoping for another one this year, and for the free agent move to be John Tavares too.
Nah, it's gonna be another Stamkos.
He's gonna stay.
It's gonna be overhyped, and he's gonna stay.
I think so. I mean, I keep betting on him to stay. If I would say it's like an 80% chance that he stays.
Yeah, I get on board with that.
That's where I kind of am on that move.
I just like, I don't see him going to a Toronto or a big market. You know, like that just doesn't seem like John Tavares to me. Oh. He's so quiet.
I know, but there's some interesting from. Dreger was saying this week, he said it's not inside information. It's not from Pat Brisson. It's not from anyone. But he said that Tavares would welcome a big market, high pressure move like Toronto or Montreal.
I can see it from the competition aspect. My big fear is just that he'd be treated like Phil.
Yeah, I could see him. The expectations would be sky high if he went to either of those cities.
Yeah.
Even higher in Montreal than Toronto.
Agreed. I mean, they've needed a center like that for so long. It would be almost impossible to live up to.
Yeah, and I mean, Toronto, he would be coming in probably as good as he is, and Tavares might be the better player right now.
He'd be the 2C, though.
He'd be seen as the 2 behind Austin Matthews, because Matthews has been the anointed one, and yeah.
Yeah. So he wouldn't. I mean, honestly, that may not be a bad move for him, is to be the 2C there.
That offense is ridiculous enough that they don't need Tavares as the 2C. I think they really need a defenseman there.
And I think if you lock down Tavares to the kind of contract it's going to take to get him in free agency, you jeopardize your future core.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it means you're trading one of Mitch Marner or William Nylander to get a defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
It means that JVR and Bozak are both gone.
No, it's a very different team with him there. I don't think it makes sense as it stands. It may make sense if you want to make room for him, but as it stands right now, it's not the right move.
No, I can't. I think the two teams that are in on Tavares, if he ever gets to, actually, I think the three teams that are in on Tavares if he gets to free agency is the ultimate Judas move and going to the New York Rangers.
I would love that.
With the money that's going to free up in Rick Nash's contract.
Yep.
So I think that that's the ultimate Judas move, and to be hated on Long Island forever and ever and ever.
He would be the new Papa. They would yell Tavares sucks.
Well, it's the Rangers who yell Pavin sucks.
I know. That would be the new champ.
Yeah, but yeah, Tavares sucks would come down from that new arena. Like, they could call it the Tavares sucks building. Tavares sucks arena. And yeah, so that's one of the three that I could. I mean, I still say it's 80% that he re-signs with the Islanders. The other is Montreal, and the third is going to Columbus.
Yeah, and those are the two for sure. I had as well was Montreal and Columbus. They need a center so bad.
Well, the Rangers need one as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's you get Derek Stepanek. I think Mika Zibanejad, as well as he's played this year, is better as a number two center.
Agreed.
And that's just everyone on that Rangers team. You just slot them down one spot in their center core, and they look so much better as a hockey team. And yeah, it's just there's the story there would just blow people's minds.
Oh, that would be a Players Tribune article. It would have to be.
Yeah. All cool. Right. Well, we wish everyone out there a happy holiday.
Yeah. From Merry Christmas. Happy Hockey. Hanukkah. Whatever you celebrate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Happy Kwanzaa.
Yeah. And as we tape this tomorrow, happy Festivus. When this will come out on Festivus.
It will indeed.
And if you want to check us out tomorrow, we may not have any new articles because after I go through the airing of grievances. It may take all day, and there will be no time for anyone to write.
This is fair.
So that might be an issue. And then I heard Colton has many of the feats of strength to perform for us.
I'm not sure I'm going to accomplish any feats of strength, but I will definitely try them for you.
All right. So we will bring out the poll tomorrow at Last Word on Hockey, and we will celebrate a Festivus for the rest of us. But whatever you're celebrating over the next little while, New Year's, Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, enjoy the time with family and friends. That's what this time of year is all about. So to you and yours, we wish you the best from Last Word on Hockey.